I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, another investigative report dives into Governor Jay Inslee's lies about juvenile detention. Plus, the cause and effect of Seattle's policy decisions is clear. And the great octopus debate of 2024. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided on this Wednesday. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback, starting with compliments for King 5 News today, which some of my friends in the talking head space have called Woke 5 News. I have never gone there, I don't think.
I have.
But they are, Nicole's like, nah, I have. They are one of the more left-leaning, blatantly so, leans into ideology and sort of the far left talking points.
Or maybe
TV
they
stations
were.
In town. Or maybe they were. I think it's fine. When you do something good, I've got to give you credit. And the King 5 investigators have been knocking it out of the park. I'm a little disappointed that their criticality of Governor Inslee comes in his final term. I kind of wish it had been ramped up a little earlier on and around maybe some of the COVID stuff. But they continue to look into this issue of what's happening in our juvenile detention facilities. And I'll just say, you know, one of the reasons why this whole issue bothers me is, you know, you want to, and I think there's this, oh, everything's wonderful and fine segment of the left. I don't think it's everyone, but I think there's a segment of the Democratic Party and the progressives who believe that if you're under the age of 18, you can't do anything bad. You can't do anything so bad that you need to be treated like a hardened criminal. And we know that that's not true. We know that some of the most heinous crimes that have happened in our state, especially in recent years, have been perpetrated by young people. Unfortunately, that's very sad. I think there are a lot of factors that if dealt with appropriately, could prevent some of this. We're going to have an example coming up of, you know, random attacks of violence from very young juveniles. And this is a horrible thing. And we as a society and as a system, we should be laser focused on that. It should be one of our top priorities. If we can't, you know, Inslee wants to talk about, oh, saving the planet and the climate for future generations. Future generations are in trouble today. And if we don't figure out why they are becoming so prone to violence, if we don't figure out why they have such, not every all of them, but a lot of them have such a disregard for the sanctity of human life, then we're going to be screwed much sooner than, I don't know, the year 3000 when Governor Inslee thinks the planet is going to end because of global warming. So anyway, you have this segment of the left, including the governor, that doesn't want to take juvenile detention seriously, but wants to pretend that it is, but isn't. And we have talked about that not only with Green Hill School, which this King 5 report focuses on, but also, what is the juvenile detention facility? I always forget the name of it. That there's always the escapees from.
Echo Glen.
Always escapes. They'll beat guards, which is a loose term at a juvenile facility. And you've had, you know, juvenile killers who have escaped from Echo Glen because they don't treat them like someone who killed somebody. And so they have lower security protocols. So you'll remember last year, the King 5 investigators and Chris Ingalls did this fantastic report looking at Green Hill School, which is in the Chehalis area, and the fact that there have been all of these issues with contraband, drugs, other things being smuggled in, sometimes guards helping facilitate this illegal activity behind bars. And it's putting not only guards at Green Hill School in jeopardy and staff, but also some of the other offenders there who aren't continuing to engage in criminal behavior while behind bars. And so you'll recall when King 5 first did their investigation into Green Hill, they talked to the governor and they said, hey, police wanted the cooperation of the state to go in and search this facility and carry out their investigation. The state made them serve a search warrant. The state made them jump through hoops. And then the governor said, well, we've got this taken care of. You know, police wanted the attorney general's office. They sent the governor a letter. They wanted the attorney general's office to open an investigation into not only what was happening at Green Hill, but what was happening across the juvenile detention system. And when King 5 asked the governor, why aren't you doing that? He said, oh, we've improved training. Got it. Because training will really help guards who are actively breaking the law and helping these offenders. Got it. And he acted like it was no big deal. Well, it continues to be a big deal. So King 5 now has a follow-up investigative report, again, from Chris Ingalls with the King 5 investigators. The headline, overdoses continue in state juvenile facility despite the governor's insistence of improvement. So I'm going to play a couple clips from this King 5 report. First, and this is when you think about it, it's shocking. So there was multiple calls to 911 made since November of 2023. So since the governor said, oh, everything's fine, we've got it handled, no need to look into this any further, there have been multiple calls to 911, either about something happening at Green Hill, or in one instance, it was a mom whose kid is currently being held at Green Hill. And think about this. She's calling 911. She wants a welfare check on her child who is being held inside a state-run juvenile detention facility.
911, what's your emergency? I'm calling for Green Hill School.
We have a resident overdosing.
They're Narcan and then...
We just had a code red. We're having a situation in one of the living units.
We have an inmate at Green Hill who would like to report a sexual assault.
An officer to stop by, pick up some contraband, makeshift weapons.
We need to roll EMS. We have a possible overdose.
I'm scared. I go to sleep every night and I pray and I talk to God because I don't know if my son gonna make it through there.
Mary asked us not to reveal her identity.
Why did you want that?
Because my son is still in this facility and I do not trust this facility at all. I'm fear for my son's safety.
Did your son ever have a drug problem?
No. People have came to him and dared him to take one of them pills.
And I would like to do a well care check with him. I actually took the Green Hill Juvenile Facility in Chehalis.
The Green Hill Juvenile Facility?
Mary called police in November to check on her son when administrators would not respond to her concerns.
I'm losing it right now, ma'am.
But I know people is coming close to dying at this facility. And it's really scary. I didn't, you know, want them to rehabilitate my son and me have to worry about him not being able to make it home to me.
Law enforcement did raise some issues. I think there was some miscommunication that occurred that was really unfortunate. But I can tell you the good news is out of that has come a stronger measures to keep drugs out.
Since the governor made that statement to us in November, we've reviewed public records showing 34 911 calls from Green Hill. Many are for drug crimes or fentanyl overdoses. One call led to the recovery of a small bag of marijuana and the arrest of a Green Hill employee, Aaron Snyderman, who allegedly carried it in. In a shift from earlier statements, the governor's office now admits that Green Hill is facing unique problems that have not been fixed. The legislature altered the law a few years ago so that the state now confines young adults up to age 25 at the school. Green Hill was built to serve children and teenagers, not young adults who have a history of violence and gang activity. The governor's spokesperson told us in a statement, there's a shortage of space, staff, and equipment for managing this new population.
Huh. Does that sound like improvements have been made to you? When King 5 first asked the governor about this, oh, we've made improvements. We're improving training. 34 911 calls since the governor said that. And you heard the nature of some of them. Roll EMS. We've got an overdose happening. Fentanyl overdoses, other issues, crimes occurring. A mom whose child is being held in juvenile detention. And they won't respond to her concerns, so she wants a welfare check on her child in juvenile detention in a state-run facility. And then you hear from Chris Ingalls, 180. The governor's office saying, okay, well, yeah, maybe there are still some issues. You think? You think? You knew there were still issues in November. The governor knew there were still issues in November, but the governor is a liar. Governor Inslee is a liar. There is no way around it anymore. He lies about everything with ease, and the media has allowed him to do that for a long time and not gone after him hard. He continues to lie about the impact the CCA is having on gas prices. Continues to do it. Boldly out in the open, even though his own staff said the policy was designed to increase gas prices, even when confronted with that, he won't admit he was lying because he feels no pressure to do so, especially not now. He's going to be out of office soon. Thank God. And then you have Chris Ingalls, which again, this is not some sort of conservative aligned entity. This is an entity that has historically been, in my opinion, way too friendly and easy on Democrats who are in power. And so now they're saying, oh, well, Green Hill has some unique challenges. So first of all, they're not unique challenges. That's a lie. We just talked about the other juvenile detention facility that has escapes all the time of murderers who beat up guards. So is that then unique challenges to them? So are there just unique challenges at all the juvenile detention facilities? And then you talk about the bill that houses offenders up to the age of 25 at these facilities. Democrats supported that. because they want this, oh, you're 25. You can't be housed in the prisons with adults. We can't have that. And so now you wonder again in that statement that they got from the governor's office, oh, we're understaffed, all of this stuff. Well, the staff you do have, some of them are criminals, as you heard in that report. And so being able to try to weed through that and hold those people accountable is very, very important. But why do you think that these juvenile detention facilities are overburdened, despite the fact that you're allowing kids, quote unquote, up to the age of 25? Could it be that you have more juveniles committing crimes? Because Democrats in this state have, increasingly so, tried to pass laws that take it easy on young people who commit even the worst of the worst crimes. And you don't think there's a cause and effect there of, oh, hey, we're giving these kids slaps on the wrist. They can do whatever they want. Steal cars, do this, armed robberies, and we're going to let them out of jail. They can be home, a home monitoring, or we're going to let them out with no bail at all. No big deal. And you don't think that teaches more and more kids in that generation that, hey, we can commit crimes, we can get money this way, we can do what we want. And then you've let them get away with that for so long, when they finally do get caught for something very serious, and maybe it's a homicide, it's too late. So this is a crisis of your own making. This is a crisis of the majority party's creation, because they want to take it soft on people, not based on, you know, they want to look at someone and say, here's how we deal with them, not based on the crime they committed, but based on their age. Which I do think, again, at the very base level, if you've got a young person who commits a not so serious crime, yeah, we need to get them on the right track and we need to take steps to do that. You don't throw them in prison, put them in solitary confinement and throw away the key. Nobody's saying that, but this is absurd. It's dangerous. It's ridiculous. And the governor continues to lie about it. So I want to play one other thing from this King 5 report, which I'll say bothers me in a different way. So now there's been all this attention, right, toward what's happening at Green Hill. And so, and you have police, you know, we had on Police Chief Stacey Denham down there on the show, who talked about, and he's one of the people who wanted the Attorney General's office and the governor's office to look into this. And so you do have, I mean, this is in a, I would say a red area, more of a purple area of the state. So I think that you have more of a willingness of law enforcement and a desire to actually go in and investigate these things and hold people accountable. And you have a prosecutor's office who, unlike King County, might be more, might have more of a desire to follow through on actually charging some of the criminal conduct that's happening behind bars, if that makes sense. But I think to what extent? So Chris Engel says that Lewis County prosecutors, now that, you know, they had these, and I don't know if this is going to be in the clip, but they were keeping all this contraband going back years. Remember, they weren't even turning it over to police. So they'd find, you know, staff would find contraband or whatever it is, and they'd lock it up in these lockers and label it and who the contraband was found with. But they wouldn't help police pursue charges. So now you got this, like, backlog, essentially, of evidence of crimes for juveniles who were detained at Green Hill. And now all of a sudden there's this desire to go back through that and charge people based on things they should have been charged with while they were incarcerated.
In Lewis County Court, prosecutors have charged 24 of the old Green Hill cases, with more filings on the way. Some of the crimes occurred years ago, raising the question, is it fair to charge them now?
I've been staying out of trouble. I've been working.
Shaquille Woods of Everett now faces felony possession of a cell phone in Green Hill, a case from more than 2 years ago, and one that threatens to upend his life.
Me and my girl live here, like, trying to be a better person, and this is just holding me back. They're trying to lock me up. I've been out for 2.5 years on probation.
Can you tell me how you got your cell phones?
I just asked the staff to bring me my cell phone. I paid him. I sent it to his P.O. box.
Yeah, that's not right. That's not right. And Shaquille Woods, if you need an advocate on your side to make that go away, if you truly have not been involved in any sort of law violations, this is 2.5 years ago, you have a job and you're trying to get your life back on track, to go after that man for a cell phone that the staff helped him get, and a cell phone that he could have been charged with right when it happened, while he was still serving time. Yet because of the state of Washington, because of DCYF, because of this soft approach, because of the absolute disarray at these juvenile detention facilities, you just let it sit in a locker, and now law enforcement's like, hey, we got to do something about that. That's not right. And you know me, I'm very like, yeah, throw the book at people, like, hard on crime. But if this is a guy who's turning his life around, you're going to undo all that progress over something that I believe is more so the fault of Green Hill School than it is of a juvenile who's like, yeah, I just asked somebody for my phone and gave him some money. That's not right. And I'll advocate for that up and down. And you know, if you had individuals who got out and went on to commit new law violations, and then you're like, hey, we also got some contraband that they had when they were at Green Hill. Yeah, fine. Charge them with that, too. Throw it on with the new law violations if they haven't changed their ways. But this is punishing someone like Shaquille Woods, who, again, I'm taking him at his word and assuming King 5 did the due diligence to make sure that he stayed out of trouble since his release from Green Hill. But if all of that is true, you're going to actually hurt this juvenile, this former juvenile, far more moving forward. And how is that in line with anything that we're trying to do with these young people? So that's stupid. So Shaquille Woods, and I mean, prosecutor's office in Lewis County, come on. I don't know where you're at ideologically, but if this is from some police department down there who listens to this show, that's stupid. Drop that case. That's ridiculous. Look into his background. Make sure he's staying on track. I don't know. Maybe add some sort of community service. Make him serve some community service for something he did 2.5 years ago as a juvenile. That's ridiculous. That's coming from me. So, like, let's undo that wrong. And let's focus more of our attention on fixing Green Hill and stopping some of these issues. So a big kudos to King 5 News for staying on this like a dog on a bone. Just because, Inslee, just because you're in your last 10 months in office, doesn't mean you get off the hook, and it doesn't mean you get to continue to lie and get away with your lies. Somebody has to demand some accountability from DCYF and from the governor's office. I mean, it's well past time for the head of DCF to be fired. He should be fired. I mean, the governor won't do it, so I don't know what other recourse there is. But between what's happening here, between, you know, kids dying because they're unduly handed back to parents who are drug addicts, I mean, DCYF is in shambles. So speaking of, you know, this desire to, oh, it's a kid, you know, slap on the wrist. Let's put them in a place we call a school with almost no security and let them get drugs in and guns and make it easy for them to escape. I need to stop using air quotes so much.
It's appropriate. So.
Okay. So this is a horrifying, horrifying story that you guys will remember. So remember, this was a few months ago, there was video that surfaced of someone just randomly hitting pedestrians on Aurora Avenue in Seattle. And it was weird at the time because it was like they couldn't find victims. So there was like this video that existed of this happening, but there hadn't been victims that SPD was able to find. And so eventually they were able to bring a case. And this is the video from SPD when they released the plea from Chief Diaz and the video that showed this asking for the public's help.
Our detectives recently obtained videos of the callous crimes which occurred on Aurora. In each video, the driver targets and strikes random pedestrians. Tonight, I'm asking for anyone with information to please come forward. What you are about to see may be disturbing.
Yeah, and so then it shows the dash cam video that was in there. Or it wasn't dash cam video, it was video, surveillance video.
Hit this.
This from inside the car.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just horrible. So not only do you have, oh my gosh. I mean, the laughing is insane. I mean, you're seeing, for those of you who are just listening to this on the podcast, you're seeing them in the car filming themselves, hit this person. And I mean, hitting them at full speed is horrifying. Well, charges have now come down in this, and I don't think it'll be a surprise to anyone to learn that the suspects are 13 and 15 years old. 13.
Can you imagine?
And 15 years old, and I was just looking at their birth dates, 2008 and 2010. And it just reminds you, like, oh my gosh. I mean, 13 and 15. So charged with assault in the second degree, which I think that's attempted murder. I don't know how you could go to assault in the second degree. That's attempted murder. What else were you trying to do? And I don't know if that's, and then there was take, oh, and this is the other element, taking a motor vehicle without permission in the second degree. Oh, do you mean that they hit these people with stolen vehicles? Shock of the century. So you tell me how someone who does that should be treated in our criminal justice system. Age aside, someone who steals a vehicle and uses it to plow down innocent people in the road, films it, and brags about it. How should that person be treated? I think that's someone who should be locked away for the rest of their life. I mean, they very well could have killed those individuals. And I don't know what the outcome of this case is going to be and these charges are going to be, but I can tell you every step of the way, there are going to be arguments that, oh, this is a 13-year-old, this is a 15-year-old. They didn't understand the consequences of their actions, but they have been, this whole environment in our state has fostered this mentality, unfortunately. And I think there's a lot of other things at play. I've said this on the show before. I think that we have young people who are completely incapable of forming meaningful interpersonal relationships. That's what really this boils down to. Social media has a lot to do with that. They don't see someone as like a flesh and blood human being. Yes, I think video games and movies and all of that brainwashing has something to do with that. But then if on the back end, you don't have real consequences for your actions, do you think this is the first time these kids committed a crime? No. Do you think this is the first time these kids, there were indicators that they would be capable of something like this? No. And we've seen other cases with juveniles down in Thurston County who, you know, this ring, and they were just stealing cars left and right. They'd go in front of a judge. The judge would release them, no bail needed. They'd go back out. They'd steal cars. The judge would release them, no bail needed. Of course they will, because you haven't shown them that there are consequences for their behavior. And then you do something like this, where do you think these kids are going to end up? In a juvenile detention facility. And is that juvenile detention facility going to be equipped to get them back on track? No, it's like a sieve where they can continue their criminal conduct while they're supposed to be rehabilitated. Or they can escape easily, multiple times over the course of a couple years. And then their life is even worse off because now they've got a charge for escape. Or now they've got a charge for doing fentanyl or doing drugs or having someone bring them weed in or sneaking a cell phone in because it's easy to do that. You're not doing any favors for these juveniles. You are helping them ruin their own lives forever. And they're going to take innocent people with them because you think we need a soft-on, hardened criminals approach because of their age. Their age is the very reason that you need to throw the book at them and help them learn that hard lesson early on in life that there are indeed consequences for their actions. Horrifying stuff. Can you imagine? Yeah, so the 15-year-old, assault in the second degree, hit and run felony, possession of a stolen vehicle, another assault in the second degree, another hit and run felony, possession of a stolen vehicle.
It's so scary that these kids don't have any empathy or...
Yeah, so his, it's horrible. Terrible. His next court date scheduled for February 7th, so that's today. It's happening at 1:30 p.m. And then the 13-year-old charges assault in the second degree, taking a motor vehicle without permission, which is a Class C felony, and another assault in the second degree.
Where are the parents? Like, a 13-year-old, where are the parents?
Well, and that's the issue, too. I mean, parenting comes into play, right? I mean, I remember, again, the case down in Thurston County where you had these juveniles who were stealing vehicles, and police knew who they were. It was the same people over and over. They weren't being held accountable, so they sent police to talk to the mom, and the police blamed the cops.
Yeah.
Yep, because then you have, you know, these ideologically aligned parents who are... who believe in this, oh, police are bad and they're after my kids. No, your kids stole the car. And the consequence, they should be more fearful to come home after being caught doing that than they should be of the police.
Right. They have no fear. Kids nope. have no fear of parents no fear. Because, you know, they're taught also at school that, you know, nobody can touch them. Nobody can, you know, you have rights. And so they think that punishments from parents are nothing to them.
No.
Anywhere. Punishments from law.
I'm curious for you guys.
For them.
In the live chat, what would you do if you're, if you found out your kid was arrested for stealing a vehicle?
I mean, be honest.
Be honest. What would you do if you found out your child was arrested for stealing a vehicle?
Not 20 years ago.
And right they're now. In jail right now because they got arrested. They're being held. Let's be honest. They're not going to be put in jail, right?
Right.
But your kid just got arrested. You got a call. They stole a vehicle. What would you do? I want to hear that in the live chat. I mean, don't get CPS to your door. So
no you more know, making spanking great again. Is that what you said?
Oh yeah. Well, no, spanking's fine, right? Corporal punishment, is that against the law in Washington? It could be. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I don't think so, but I'll look it up.
Okay, look that up because I know there's some states that have banned corporal punishment. Anyway, we're off track. I just had to do a a funny follow up because did someone send you this? Or did you see this? Someone sent you this, right?
Somebody.
So you recall on Sundays with Subscribers this week, and we played a clip on the show yesterday. We had on Tom Nelson with the Outdoor Line, and he was just raving mad about the state of the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission, which they feel like has now become this ideologically aligned commission, and they're anti-hunter and they're anti-fisherman. Here's a clip from that interview.
This commission now, as it is constituted, is full of anti-hunters. None of these people have ever had a hunting or fishing license. They do not understand the biology. They are a body of arrogance that demands that you educate them before you debate them.
So anyway, we play that, and then somebody sent us the recruiting, like the hiring website for WDFW. It just explains perfectly what Tom's talking about. And what the, it has, I mean, it's like, this is the front page of, and it says our mission and our values. They've got a couple people, like pictures of people fishing. And then the biggest graphic on that front page is the WDFW logo in front of a trans pride flag. Like, of all the things that you could put forth about, oh, who would make a good part of our team? It's like there's this big logo in front of the trans pride flag. Everyone belongs outdoors. Like, I do agree that everyone belongs outdoors, but there's a lot of segments of society that don't use or appreciate the outdoors as much as, you know, some people. And so it's like, oh, you could have, what is it? What it could be women. It could be people of color. It could be whatever it is. But it's like, no, we're focusing on transgender individuals. And it's right. Like, why? That makes no sense. So based on like so how someone believes their gender is, you're gonna, that's who you want to recruit.
If you're a white dude, do you have a chance?
Yeah, probably not getting that job. Well, if you're a transgender white dude, that supersedes the color of your skin.
There we go. That's
so there is a hierarchy of all of that. We can go over it sometime on where, I mean, you and I are actually pretty close to the bottom. We're women, but like, there's nothing special about us otherwise. Somebody count the number of times I used air quotes on the show. We're women, but we don't got anything else going on.
Blue eyes? No. Blonde? I mean, no. Yeah, we're screwed.
We're real screwed. Yeah. Okay, coming up next, we've been talking about the consequences of policies. And I think you have, you know, this segment, especially progressives and the liberal Democrats who just kowtow to progressives, who they push things based on, oh, that sounds nice. Doesn't that sound nice? And then they don't think about the consequences, or they don't care to acknowledge the consequences of their policies. And there are three examples of that happening right now in the city of Seattle. And we're going to go over every single one of them. First, I got a text yesterday. You know, I got a text from my friend David Rose, over at my former colleague. You know what he said to me? Hold on.
What did he say?
He's probably like, don't read my text, Brandy. I didn't get permission. He said, we have officially switched our insurance companies through First Mark, saving hundreds of dollars a month.
Oh, he better have told them.
Well, he's like, I hope you get credit. Yeah, isn't that nice?
Oh, so good.
Even David Rose is using First Mark Insurance because
and
it's
listening
an
to
absolute,
Undivided.
And listening to Undivided. Well, who isn't? I mean, who isn't listening to Undivided? And now is a really good time to have an insurance broker. First of all, it costs you nothing. So it's like, okay, I can deal with all my insurance needs myself and not even fully understand what I have and what I need and what I don't need and whether I'm getting the best price. Or I could go with First Mark Insurance and they can do all of that for me for free. Wow, really tough decision that you have on your hands. David's a smart man. He knows. So we had in Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, and the insurance industry has been very strange, right? Because they're not making a profit, and insurance industry is a for-profit, so just the big carriers out there. So they're cutting people left and right. I mean, you can make just a small little claim, or you drive a Kia or a Hyundai, and they're like, eh, we're not going to insure you anymore, which is one of the reasons it's so good to have an insurance broker, because if you're a First Mark client that happens to you, they're going to fight for you. They're going to go to bat for you, and then they're going to try to get you a new carrier if the other carrier won't take you back. And he is, though, however, optimistic that that weird period insurance has been in is going to turn around this year.
I'm seeing good signs right now in the fourth quarter reports we're getting from carriers that their profitability numbers are turning around. Those combined ratios that I mentioned earlier at the 130 range, 120, 130, those are dropping now. Some carriers are even under 100. So it's going to be first they have to get those numbers in line. And once they do, then the underwriting will loosen up. And we'll hopefully get back to a place where insurance companies are profitable and they're looking to write business and grow again.
FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge today. Be cool, like all the people who are members of the First Mark family. Why would you not want to be? Okay, policies have consequences. We know that. And I don't know if there's one side that's just ignorant to the consequences or if they're just comfortable in their bubble and they're doing what they think feels good and they just don't care what the consequences are. So there have been a couple examples of this, which common sense people with a little bit of independent thought knew all of these things were going to happen. So when you, for instance, go after people because they're rich and they're successful and how dare they, that's awful. Give more of your money to other people. Those individuals who have built successful careers, in some cases successful companies, who have built big bank accounts, they're not going to tolerate it because they're smarter than that. And if they can get away from being targeted in that way, they're going to. And then what do you do? Well, you scare away the people who want to be entrepreneurs, who want to build businesses, who want to contribute to our economy. They're not going to deal with it, so they're going to go somewhere else. And that's exactly what Jeff Bezos did. So you recall Jeff Bezos moved to Florida. Well, what happened a few months after the news that he's moving to Florida? Well, he has now announced that he's going to sell up to 50 million Amazon shares by January 31st of next year. Does anyone think that is a coincidence? This reporting is from Bloomberg. If Bezos follows through with the plan, it would mark the first time he has sold Amazon stock since 2021. Interesting. You know, that's interesting because you're saying the last time he sold stock was before the capital gains tax took effect. And then he moved to Florida where there is no capital gains tax, and now he's going to sell it. It goes on to say he did buy a single share of the company in May, his first recorded purchase in records going back to 2002 without an explanation. The Amazon co-founder recently announced he's moving to Miami from the Seattle area, which means Washington State could miss out on a tax windfall from any potential share sale. Washington recently introduced a capital gains tax, while Florida doesn't have one. So how much money does Jeff Bezos save by not selling that stock until he's a firm Floridian? $600 million. I had to laugh at this graphic the Washington State Senate Republicans put out. They said, enjoy your capital gains tax, Washington. Love from Florida, Jeff Bezos. And people want to deny, you know, he said, oh, I'm moving here for family, whatever it is. But again, if you have independent thought and you're looking at that, and last time he sold stocks was before the capital gains tax, and the next time he's selling it is after he's moved out of state and won't be subject to the capital gains tax, I think that's pretty obvious. So $600 million that he gets to keep in his own pocket because he's not going to pay what is an unconstitutional tax on capital gains, which, by the way, I hear there's an initiative to repeal that. Gosh, maybe we should, as Washingtonians, repeal that on the ballot in November so people who contribute to our economy won't move out of state. Sounds like a good thing. Okay, another cause and effect to talk about. So in the city of Seattle, they, again, wanted to do something that was so great and awesome, and we're going to help Uber drivers, and we're going to make sure that they can make a living. So they wanted Uber drivers to make a minimum wage of $26 an hour. So in order to do that, and you might have seen this on your app, and all rideshare drivers, not just Uber, you might have seen this on your app, a notification, that in order to achieve that $26 an hour minimum wage, that these rideshare companies were instituting fees. So a $5 fee is what they've done, and you probably got that little notification. So $5 fees. So what's happening now? Okay, so you force them to raise wages, you force them to add a $5 fee that consumers have to pay when they order a ride from Uber, for example. Well, now the Uber drivers are making less money because fewer people are willing to pay the cost associated with that policy and that fee. This is from King 5. It's definitely backfiring. Seattle ordinance intended to help app delivery workers is hurting them. Here's a clip from the King 5 story.
And it's definitely backfiring.
Since January 13th.
I've got nothing. I'm not going to sit here for hours for one frickin' order. So you might have that hour and you literally only made $8 for that hour.
That ordinance was meant to improve wages for gig workers. You pay more.
The problem is that they're not telling the whole story.
And DoorDash, for example, says drivers will get paid more. At least $26.40 per hour before tips in their estimation.
Assuming that you are working constantly, then yes, you're going to be making that much money. But that's not what's happening right now because people are not ordering as much anymore.
One driver shared how much he made on this week last year, nearly $1,000. But this is what he made this week. And he's not alone.
Half.
They say they believe they're also competing against more drivers now. And
the tips are going down because they think we're making all this money.
For real, we are grinding and we are for real not getting $26 an hour.
Interesting. Again, you know, the people who push these policies, and again, credit to King 5 News, that they would actually follow up and say, hey, this woke policy is backfiring on the people who you said you were going to help. Imagine that. A policy passed in the city of Seattle is actually hurting the people who they said it was going to help. And so now they're trying to work harder, longer hours, not making as much money. Is that the intended consequence? If that's not the intended consequence, then an actual public servant would go the other way. An actual public servant, despite the fact if ideologically you agreed with this in principle, would take a step back and say, hey, this is actually hurting the people who we wanted to help, so we need to reevaluate this policy, and we need to see maybe there's another way that we can do it if to achieve the outcome that we want to achieve. But policies have consequences. If you're going to push the policy, you have to be willing to consider genuinely the consequences. So now a third story on this, and this has not happened yet. So given the other two stories we discussed, and a lot of examples, you look at the head tax on Amazon and big business in Seattle that eventually was reversed. They followed it up with a tax on high-paying jobs. What did Amazon do? It started to move thousands of jobs over to Bellevue. So Seattle should have learned its lesson very clearly on what happens when you go after successful companies and the net loss, the net negative that that is for your city economically. Well, what's being proposed now? This from Publicola. Social housing backers propose new tax on pay above $1 million. This is from my best friend, Erica C. Barnett, over at the Publicola. House Our Neighbors, the group in 2022 passed an initiative setting up a new development authority to create permanent affordable housing, filed a Seattle initiative on Tuesday, I-136, that would impose a, quote, excess compensation tax on employers with workers who make more than $1 million a year. The goal is to put the measure on the ballot in November. The group will need to collect more than 26,000 valid signatures from Seattle residents to get the initiative on the ballot. The proposal, if adopted by voters, would impose a 5% tax on individual compensation above $1 million, including stock options, bonuses, and deferred compensation. The tax would be paid by businesses, not employees. The proposal is modeled on the city's jumpstart payroll tax with at least two significant differences. It would only kick in after the first $1 million in compensation. Jumpstart currently applies to companies whose workers make over $182,000 a year, and it would apply to grocery stores and healthcare companies, both currently exempt from the Jumpstart tax. So you want to double down on a tax that has already hurt Seattle economically. And look, you could be saying, oh, the government's getting a lot of money into its coffers. That's obviously not a good gauge of a city's economic vibrance. I mean, Bruce Harrell just put the city in a hiring freeze, and it's because the city just pisses away money. And so you can have a jumpstart tax. We're going to jumpstart our economy. How's that working out? Because the government squanders money. So you're actually taking that money away from private enterprise that does that money for more good. They hire people. They can give people bonuses. They contribute to the economy. And when you have a company like Amazon that's contributing to the economy in such a big way with thousands and thousands of employees, we've talked about this before, there's a trickle-down effect. Amazon employees are actually actively in Seattle working. It's cutting down on crime. It's improving the quality of life and the vibrancy. You have more people walking into restaurants and coffee shops, visiting Pike Place Market, helping other small businesses, whether they're laundromats or gyms or doggy daycares or whatever it is. So you want to punish the big companies up here, and in doing so, you punish all the other businesses down the food chain that rely on them. And you want to do that because you think their money is better in the hands of the government than it is in the hands of the private sector, which could not be a dumber thought. And what's going to happen if you do this? Well, this is basically a commercial for the city of Bellevue. Bellevue will benefit from this, which is fine. Good for Bellevue, as long as they don't turn and go woke like Seattle, because they've been allowing these anti-Semites to march in the city and not doing anything about it, and that's a little ridiculous. But you're going to have Bellevue benefit from increased investment there, which Amazon has been building buildings left and right and helping invest in infrastructure in the city. You're going to benefit from the high earners who no longer are going to be in Seattle because their companies are going to move their jobs to Bellevue, and they're going to be spending their money at Bellevue businesses and at Bellevue Square and all these things. And Bellevue is going to become more successful, and Seattle is going to become less successful. So this is an initiative which, you know, I'm fully in support of initiatives. You can get the necessary number of signatures, more power to you by all means. But hopefully Seattle voters have already seen the consequences of things like this and understand that even if it sounds nice and people who make more than $1 million, yeah, that's fine. Let's take more of their money. You're actually hurting people who make far less than $1 million. There has to be a wake-up call at some point. And I think a good example of what's happening, Nicole, is what we're dealing with right now. So Nicole and I are looking for a new, bigger lease space for our business. And we're only looking on the east side because we don't want to run the show in Seattle. There's a lot of reasons for that. Crime is a real concern. And also, like, I don't want protesters outside our door in Seattle every single day.
Don't give them any ideas.
But I think the funny thing is, when you look at lease prices for a business, in Bellevue, some of these places want like $50 a square foot per year. And in Seattle, it's like 19. We could get a great spot in Seattle. We could get a huge spot in Seattle. But, and it's because businesses don't want to be there. So it's cheap. It's dirt cheap.
And accessibility. You can't get in and out of Seattle anymore, and there's no parking, and there's, you
crime
know,
and all these
all
things.
The things.
It's not as desirable
a
place.
Desirable
so
at all.
That's literally an example of that, because when you're a business and you're, where is it desirable to be a business? Mm-hmm. You can just look at the cost of a commercial lease space, and you know where it's desirable to be a business and to have a business, because it's much more expensive. And it is not desirable to have a place in Seattle, because I'm telling you, we could get like 5,000 square feet in Seattle and probably be able to manage that. I mean, we don't need that much space.
Right.
But nobody wants to be there. And there's a plethora of open spaces. Not so much on the east side. It's really hard to find one. Okay, so anyway, cause and effect. It's very, very obvious. People need to open up their eyes. So we've been talking about the Fed deciding to keep rates high. And they've said in December, we're going to cut interest rates 3 times and help Joe Biden in an election year. But that hasn't manifested yet. And it's unclear if and when it's going to. I mean, is it going to happen in the spring or not? Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital tends to think that they're not going to be willing to pull the trigger in a couple months either.
They played it too soft, financial conditions loosened, stock markets went up, and we said, okay, we think that's going to result in the hotter data economically in the first quarter of this year. That's exactly what we've seen, which that hotter data takes being able to cut out of his hands. And so now he's not going to be able to cut in March, which means rates are going to stay higher for longer. And you're just looking at these guys going, can somebody please be an adult in the bloody room, rip the Band-Aid off, and let's get on with it. But they just won't do it. It just extend and pretend.
Yeah, extend and pretend. And that's one of the reasons why, while they extend and pretend and all these crazy things are happening with the economy that don't make any sense, part of that's because we're in an election year. And so it's more important than ever to be managing your risk actively. Whether you're just starting to save your retirement, you're getting close to retirement, or you are in retirement, leaving your hard-earned retirement up to the whim of the Fed and Biden in an election year is an insane thing to do. So you need to have a partner that's actively managing your risk. And that's what Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital specialize in. So I suggest scheduling a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach Abraham. He's the chief investment officer at Bulwark. He also hosts Know Your Risk Radio podcast, which you can find knowyourriskradio.com. So their portfolio review, it's a great way just to see, are you overexposed to risk? Just getting that simple question answered. And there's no obligation. In fact, Bulwark doesn't let you invest with them at your first meeting, so you'll have to go and stew on it and come back. But whether you become a client or not, you're going to leave much more informed about the risk to your retirement. So schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right, what's happening right now in Olympia? We're more than halfway through the legislative session. And of course, Democrats have finally come around to the idea of focusing on important policies. Democrats are finally going to prioritize those 6 voter initiatives and critical issues like the public safety crisis. Just kidding. They're talking about protecting octopuses. Octopuses? Octopi? Is it octopi?
Yes, I think it's octopi.
I like octopuses. Boop.
I think there's a movie called Octopussy.
Nicole.
Well, it's not the bad word.
What's going on over here today? I'm sure it's octopi.
That's
I like probably. Octopuses. Stupid. It's stupid. But you know what? This bill is stupid. So all the huge important issues in a short session, 60 days, Nicole's over there crying, 60 days. We have a lot going on. We want some simple hearings on the voter initiatives that more than 800,000 voters signed their names to. That's not asking too much. In fact, the Constitution says it's not asking too much because they should be holding hearings on these things. Man, you look at all the other crises, homelessness, substance abuse, crime, all these things that, gosh, I mean, these are the general responsibilities of government at the very base level. And those things are not only being ignored, the types of things they're prioritizing, in my opinion, show the utter disdain they have for the people of Washington and for good governance. So one of those bills that is scooting along just fine has to do, it was...
Swimming along just fine
with its little tentacles, is from Representative Strom Peterson, and it has to do with octopus farming.
Some people ask, as I brought this bill forward, well, we don't farm octopus in the great state of Washington, and that is true. But we also want to make sure that we don't go down the path. Octopus farming is becoming more and more pervasive throughout the world, and we know that, one, these sentient beings do not do well in that kind of captive environment. And we also know that here in Washington that our waters, whether it be Puget Sound or Hood Canal or our near ocean waters, are very sensitive to the creatures that live there, including some deep water octopus.
I've never seen that attendee.
Stupid.
All morning, Brandy was cracking up over there, and she's like, oh, there's something really, I'm working on something, and I'm just hilarious.
You know how much time it took me to place a fake octopus behind Rep Peterson?
A lot of time.
Like, way too much time than I should have dedicated for it. So if you see other areas of the show today that are lacking, it's because my sole focus was to make sure there was an octopus sitting behind Representative Peterson.
Oh,
but here's the thing, like, think of how dumb that is. We don't even have octopus farming. We don't have octopus farms. And he's like, yeah, but we could.
We don't have
6 initiatives, a public safety crisis, a homeless crisis, all these things. You know, we don't have octopus farms, but we got to pass a bill just in case. Wow. It is crazy stuff. So then meanwhile.
Some people ask, I brought this bill forward.
I just want to make sure everybody can
see
that octopus back there, in case they missed it.
Excuse me, his name is Mr. Octopus. And that is true. But we also want to make sure that we don't.
Oh, I need to just get it together, Brandy. So anyway, that's happening. There's all this ridiculousness. And so, yes, Democrats are pushing forth some really silly bills, some bills that are completely unnecessary. And then they're pushing through some bills that are deadly serious. But they do the opposite of what we need to be doing in Washington State on the public safety front, for instance. We've talked about some of this absolutely absurd public safety bills, you know, trying to give Gary Ridgway the right to vote and sit on a jury and run for public office, trying to change the name of sex offenders so it's not so, what, offensive to them. Insane stuff, given the other crises that we're dealing with. So one of these bills that's actually very dangerous, and I'm not going to laugh at this one, it's 1579, and it would, get this, it would help make it easier for Attorney General Bob Ferguson to prosecute police officers. A guy who just went 0-for-4 in prosecutions against the police, wasn't able to get a successful prosecution against 3 Tacoma police officers who he said were killers. They were acquitted. And so now what are Democrats running? This bill that would establish a mechanism for independent prosecutions within the Office of the Attorney General of criminal conduct arising from police use of force. That's what they're focusing on. So Representative Jim Walsh stood up on the floor of the House. This was a few hours before the great octopus debate of 2024. And so he stands up and he tries to make this point. Like, what are we doing? Everyone wants bad cops held accountable. But what are we doing pushing bills like this right now? And unlike the critical conversation that would later come in the great octopus debate of 2024, Jim Walsh was cut off from the very salient point he was making.
We know that the state of Washington is currently in the midst of a crime crisis, with crime rates exploding in all corners of our state, Madam Speaker. We know that Washington has fewer law enforcement officers per capita than the rest of the country, including the District of Columbia, Madam Speaker. We know, Madam Speaker, that the state has created an atmosphere that is anti-police, anti-cop, and pro-criminal. Madam Speaker, we know that we have to do better. by law enforcement. And Madam Speaker,
if you, the Speaker could talk to the policy and not impugn members, please proceed.
Madam Speaker, we know that we have to do more to fight crime in Washington. And while this policy proposal may be well-intended, Madam Speaker, it creates a level of bureaucratic oversight that we know doesn't help fight crime in Washington. Madam Speaker, intent is wonderful, intent is fine, but the practical effects of the decisions we make here on the floor are what the people of Washington have sent us here to rectify. They're the reason the people of Washington have sent us here to do better by them.
Yeah. So let it be noted what the priorities are of Democrats in Olympia during a short session. Octopi? Let's get that done. Listening to Jim Walsh talk about the absolute destruction of the state from a criminal justice perspective? Out of order. Unbelievable. Okay, coming up next, Ronna McDaniel is stepping down, she says, as the chairwoman of the RNC. Does it matter? Is it a big deal? Will it help Republicans? Will it hurt Republicans in a critical election year? We'll discuss and also hear the opinions of our subscribers on that issue first. Again, we've been talking about interest rates and whether they're going to cool a little bit and help out particularly the real estate market. Wes Jones, who's been a real estate agent for years with sellwithwes.com, he, you know, he's been through a lot of ups and downs, and he says he does expect them to drop at some point. And when they do, you're going to see all that pent up demand come to fruition. Where do you think interest rates need to be at to really get the market back up and humming again?
I think if we get into the high fives, that is going to be a real breakthrough. You know, we got, when we were at 7 and now into the high sixes, that brought in another section of buyers. And if we get that into the low sixes or high fives, I think things will really start to move again. And, you know, we're already seeing multiple offers in a lot of different price points and, you know, different cities. It's going to make housing more affordable, and it's going to bring more buyers out into the market again. What's that going to do? It's going to push the prices back up. So one of the things that I do see happening, or could see happening in 2024, is all of the gains that we lost in 2022, I think there's a really good chance we make those up in 2024.
Yeah, and the bottom line is no one can predict what the Fed is going to do. You just can't. Wes can't. Our friend Zach Abraham, although he's usually right on those things, he can't predict it either, and they know that. But particularly if you're looking to sell your home at some point in the next 3 to 6 months, being ready for that when it happens is critical, because then you can get your home on the market right away. It's already ready to go. You've done any updates that you need to do, and then you get to take advantage of the huge influx in buyers who are going to be out there. So reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Talk about all the services they offer to home sellers and start by simply using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. All right, let's dip outside of Washington State, although I think there are some implications here as well in the 2024 election. Ronna McDaniel says she's stepping down as chairwoman of the RNC. This from the New York Times. Donald Trump is likely to back a supporter of his false claims of election fraud, they say, Michael Whatley, the head of the North Carolina GOP, to replace her. And so Ronna McDaniel, she told apparently former President Donald Trump that she's going to step down after the South Carolina primary, which is on February 24th. And they're citing two people familiar with her plans in the New York Times article. And I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, like, to what extent you care. Is it positive? Is it negative? Because you are in the middle of an election cycle, right? So I do think that's kind of an odd time for the head of a national party to step down. But, you know, Donald Trump, that whole situation is very interesting. Ronna McDaniel has been a little bit of a divisive figure within the GOP. A lot of you are saying, though, that this is a positive development. Travis says, I can't possibly imagine a new head being any worse in terms of top-level outcomes since 2018. I mean, when you look at what happened in 2022, a lot of Republicans will put that on. I mean, when you're in a position like that, you do take the blame. And Republicans performed well under where they should have in 2022. I think some of that was out of their control, like Roe v. Wade, et cetera. Will Culbertson says she has been horrible for the RNC and a change is much needed. Greg Anderson says, personally, I think the Republican Party has outlived its usefulness. I've been a lifelong Republican, voted for President Reagan in 1980 and in 84. There is no one out there running today. It makes me want to support them. I think this is largely due to the fact that the Republican Party just doesn't adopt any kind of new strategies or new communication techniques. I agree with that. I mean, the Republican Party is on the verge of irrelevance in Washington State. This year, I think, is going to make or break that. Can Dave Ryker win the governorship? Can they make any sort of meaningful advancements in the House and the Senate? If they can't, then I don't know where you go from there. If you have to have Republicans focus on smaller races and sort of rebuilding their reputation. But I think you make a good point about Republicans haven't been great at reinventing themselves as the public and what the public cares about changes over time. And also, Republicans have no discipline. Democrats have much more discipline as a party than Republicans do. Chris says, questioning if Ronna Romney McDaniel's leaving the RNC is a good thing. Come on, man. Come on. You know, Mitt Romney wasn't so bad. Oh, I'm going to get comments on that. I'm also a John McCain lover, which I hate when people dog on John McCain. I hate it. I hate it so much.
Okay.
Deep in my core.
There's always something people disagree about. You don't got to hate. That's why
I'm not telling you, I'm telling other people, anybody
that would come after you for disagreeing.
The fact that people, just because Donald Trump didn't like John McCain, they'd be like, oh yeah, John McCain sucks. It's like, okay, the man was literally a national treasure. And you might not have agreed with him on a couple things, but it's like, using Donald Trump as the barometer for who you're going to like and respect is a terrible barometer.
I think it's a very small portion of folks believe that.
Harold says, honestly, based on past results, she hasn't gotten things done. We have to try something different. Let me see if there's any good responses over on X. X has been fun, you know? We've got a little growing subscriber base over on X. They take the poll, but you don't leave comments. Leave some comments on there so I can read them.
Okay, so I
don't have an opinion one way or the other, I guess. I mean, I think, you know, it's in the middle of an election, but it's pretty early on in the process, in the nominating process. Republicans already know who their nominee is going to be, so it's not like you're in the middle of this hotly contested nominating process and then the RNC chair dips out. So she knows what the result is going to be, and maybe that's why she wants to leave.
I think it's positive.
Nicole, what do you think? You think it's positive? Good. Okay. And why do you think it's positive?
I just think there needs to be some change. I think that's a feeling, and that's why, you know, Jim stepping up here and her stepping down there, maybe people will feel like the Republican Party is trying to distance them from the Democrats claiming they don't assigning they don't recognize the party. So I had somebody tell me that. Oh, yeah. I don't recognize the Republicans today. And I was like, that's because of the Democrats' messaging.
Yeah. And I don't recognize the Democrats.
Exactly. And so I think we need some new blood in there to get in and say, you know what? We hear you, see you, whatever, and this is how we're going to strategize from here on. Because it's not necessarily what they believe and what they're fighting for. It's the messaging and the response to the Democrats, and that needs to change.
People want, and they want this in Washington too, like a more fierce fighter, right?
And that's good
and bad. It's like they see the Democrats playing dirty and they're like, well, we need to like come back at them. And it's like, to a certain extent, I do think that they need to be better at
defending,
but not even getting to the point where you're on the defensive, right?
Right.
And like a Tiffany Smiley situation where it's like, oh, she hates women and reproductive rights. And it's like, okay, now we're trying to play catch up, but we don't have enough money.
Right.
So I think you do have to be more aggressive in that regard.
Responsive.
But there's also this feeling that like, oh, all the leadership needs to be more pro-Trump. In Washington State, that's just silly. That's just ridiculous.
Right.
So, and also you already see how the New York Times is going to paint this if he picks this Michael Whatley guy. Oh, he's the supporter of his false claims of election fraud. And so if that's the person who's running the RNC, and then Democrats are going to glob onto that, and how do you push back against that? So we shall see.
Yeah.
One more national story. Interesting of Donald Trump. So Donald Trump does this Truth Social post. Still going to the Truth Social, huh? How's it going over there? I have never joined.
I don't know. That's the only place he posts, though, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Well, you would, too, if it was your platform. Why would you post on somebody else? Why would you post on a competitor?
And people go there for it.
He is calling on people to give Bud Light a second chance, which I think is kind of nice. You know, it's like, I don't think Bud Light tastes good, so I didn't give them a first chance. But he said, the Bud Light ad was a mistake of epic proportions and not And for that, a very big price was paid. But Anheuser-Busch is not a woke company, but I can give you plenty that are, in building a list and might just release it for the world to see. So anyway, I'm not going to read that whole thing. That's pretty long. But he's, and then he goes on, Anheuser-Busch is a great American brand that perhaps deserves a second chance. What do you think? Perhaps instead we should be going after those companies that are looking to destroy America. It's interesting, though, because, I mean,
maybe this is the beginning of something.
But, like, what prompted that?
Because, like, the Bud Light, somebody.
Well, the Bud Light ad was a total disaster. And so it just seems weird. It seems out of the blue. Like, is he doing that for someone because they're trying to?
Or maybe it's a metaphor for himself. He wants people to give him a second chance.
I don't know.
I'm sure he's playing with it. There's some manipulation in there. Either that or he just knows somebody.
Either that or he's like, yeah, he's got some stocks or something. Brush. I don't even know. So, okay. All right. We're going to get to questions and comments right now. Okay. On Green Hill School, Elowyn Wheeler says, I love that name, Elowyn. It's like a Lord of the Rings character. Mm-hmm. Don't forget what happened to Western State. Same negligence, different facility. Yeah, Western State lost its federal accreditation under this governor. And they want to talk about mental health? Yeah, let's talk about it. Let's talk about what you did to Western State. Let me see. Carolyn says they would be spending time and we asked, what would you do if you found out your child stole a car? Caroline says they would be spending time in jail. Catherine says, let them stay where they are. No bail. Throw the book at them. Then consequences at home. Yeah, I think running to bail your kid out. I mean, I'm not going to tell you how to parent, but that might not be the best lesson.
And by the way, corporal punishment, obviously illegal in schools, not at home. But if you beat your kid, there's a thin line between spanking and beating. So,
like, open hand, okay. Yeah, closed fist, probably not. I'm not trying to give you advice or punish your kids. Let's
Here's
be clear.
Tutorial.
Joanne says parents need to be held responsible also for their kids under 18. Maybe if they start making parents responsible for what they do, they will pay more attention to what their kids are doing. And I think there's a gray area there, and it's tough because I think every parent has probably been there where their kid did something that that was illegal or they weren't proud of. I mean, I got arrested when I was a kid for MIP. Do you know what that is? Minor in possession. Mm-hmm. So it's like, do you hold my, I lied to my parents about where I was going, and that's just a kid thing. So at what point do you hold them accountable for your child's behavior? So I think that's kind of tough, but definitely for restitution. I mean, parents are the ones who are going to have to pay restitution anyway. So if you force collect it and you make sure that they have to pay restitution for things, that's a little different. I think that's tough. It's like, what crimes? There was just the mom who is held accountable for some sort of manslaughter charge for the school shooting her son carried out.
Oh, yeah, she's, that's in there. Mm-hmm.
And so stuff like that, that's an interesting concept, is was there gross negligence on the part of a parent where they contributed to something or knew about it and didn't do anything to interrupt
it? The negligence thing, maybe you could say with your MIP, maybe you were saying you were somewhere. So your parents believe you're somewhere safe and not doing wrong.
Yeah.
And so it's a, do you know where your kid is at least?
Right. Well, it's different if, like, for instance, your kid's like, I'm going to go to a party, and you're like, here's the booze.
Right.
And then they go and, they get in trouble. That's different. Greg says, if my kid stole a car, you wouldn't see the light of day for a long time. I love
it. Room.
Carlene Heath, why aren't we transferring these 18 to 25 year olds to the big house since these juvie playpens can't handle the gangs and violent offenders? I agree. Instead, what do they want to do? Close the jail in Seattle? Oh, we don't need that and do all this. It's like, that's ridiculous.
Well, that's probably something they should be dealing with in Olympia right now, because that's why this is happening, is because they changed that. And so maybe that's something they should be talking about instead of octopus.
Instead of the octopi.
Instead of octopi. I only saw one in the picture.
I already know that Matt Gilbert is isolating your comment, and it's going to be a video on social media. Okay, Rodney says, I would make my kids do chores for the affected family until an agreed upon debt is paid off and lots of counseling. I like that idea. Make them work.
Mm-hmm.
Jay says, I would make my son watch prison videos. what kind of prison videos? Let me see. Chrisman Wilkie says, gone is the cell phone. Gone is the room. Is the door on his or her bedroom, for starters. Cannot say the rest in this format. Yeah, probably wise. Although we just talked about the standards for corporal punishment. Summer Chen Zhao with a $9.99 super chat.
Just to be nice.
Just to be nice. Are you sure? I thought that was for my snorts.
Oh, it might have been your snort. It was around that time that she sent it.
Hold on. Now I got to look because I disagree. I feel like there was a comment attached to it. Now I don't even see it.
No, it's right there. It's just a one. It's her first one.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for your first super chat. Yeah. Jennifer says, did I hear two snorts? Couldn't help it. It could not be helped. Nancy Campbell says, let's shut down I-5 for the octopus protest. And we can all have, like, put on, like, little appendages, like, release eight tentacles. Kraken. Oh, yes. Stephen Ford says, $10. Thanks to both of you for who you are.
Thanks for who both of you are.
Yeah.
There you go.
Tim says, the tentacles are never ending. Send them out to sea. Our government is absurd and should be put out to pasture into the sound. Put out to pasture. Let's not go there. Unless you're talking about put out to pasture, like, just retire.
I think so.
I think that has a different meaning. So obviously not that. Meh. Don't take it to mean that. Okay, should we get to our... I felt like I was missing a comment that I was like, I definitely want to read.
Oh, geez.
Are you sure? Hold on.
I was really busy. You know?
Anyway, okay. All right. Let's get to our closing sanity check with President Joe Biden's critical words on what's happening at the southern border. So this bipartisan deal that was reached in the Senate to try to deal with border security, but also give a bunch of money to Ukraine and humanitarian aid in Gaza and Israel, it has fallen apart. And I think that's unfortunate. I mean, I do understand some of the Republicans who are like, you're giving more money to Ukraine than you're dedicating to border security. So I understand that. But things are so bad right now. The willingness of Democrats to invest in any sort of increased security at the border, I think, is a good thing. I don't know if you can get around giving money to Ukraine. I get it. It's not perfect, but it's sort of a start. And this is why I go back to neither side wants to solve it. And so Democrats are going to use this, as you'll hear from Biden momentarily, as a, oh, Republicans, you know, they don't want to fix the border. They didn't support this. And so the border is their fault. And then Republicans want this as a campaign issue for sure. And so they don't want to give Democrats a win on the border and saying, oh, we just voted all this money in for border security, because it doesn't become as good of a campaign narrative for them. So both of those things are absolutely true. They don't want to fix it. They want to blame each other. And meanwhile, our country is just going to you know what. So anyway, Biden took this a whole step further. And I wonder who Joe Biden is blaming the current border crisis on. Let's listen.
It's time to stop. It's time to stop playing games with the world waiting and watching. We can't continue to let petty partisan politics get in the way of our responsibility. But if the bill fails, I want to be absolutely clear about something. The American people are going to know why it failed. I'll be taking this issue to the country, and the voters are going to know that it's not just a moment. Just at the moment, we're going to secure the border and fund these other programs. What? Trump and the MAGA Republicans said no, because they're afraid of Donald Trump. Afraid of Donald Trump. Every day between now and November, the American people are going to know that the only reason the border is not secure is Donald Trump and his MAGA Republican friends.
The only reason the border is not secure is Donald Trump and his MAGA Republican friends. And we have more crossings than ever, inarguably, under this administration. They have actually taken Texas to court and won the U.S. Supreme Court to get them to remove razor wire. There's no question in the world that Democrats are responsible for the existing crisis at our southern border. Now, I do agree that Republicans should be, even in an election year, trying to do what they can with Democrats to improve the situation. If we're not going to improve the situation on any election year, election cycles never end in this country. That's always going to be a consideration. But the idea that Donald Trump is to blame for the crisis at the southern border is a level of unhinged I wasn't quite sure that President Biden could even reach. But make no mistake, he will try to sell that. People will believe it. So as we discussed earlier, it's the job of Republicans to push back against that. But we're in for a whole 9 months of dishonesty around this issue. As all that happens, America suffers. And that's the sad state of the two-party system. That has been our sanity check for today, or insanity check, rather. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Hey, check out our merch store. You know, we're trying to move studios soon. We need to unload some of our inventory. So if you haven't checked out our merch store yet, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Subscribers, remember, you have a secret? You have a secret squirrel code to get $5 off. Yeah, thanks for being here. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. Now go out there and farm some octopi. Right, Nicole?
Or don't.
We'll see you back in the live show tomorrow at noon.